you know, that's entertainment with Michael Leddy and our overlord here at Highland Radio, Fionnuala Rabbit. Fionnuala, thanks so much for joining us.
You're very welcome.
How are you keeping?
Lovely now, sure. You know me, I'm a sun person, so I couldn't be happier.
Exactly.
I will finally admit that I am in Donegal and I am warm.
I know, it's strange.
Anybody who ever meets me along the road will know it's my main complaint, particularly the girls across the road in the petrol station. They always say, how are you? I'm like, freezing.
And
I am finally warm. It's only taken 32 degrees. But
do you like the heat at night?
I don't mind it, but then I don't have anybody else beside me creating an extra hot water bottle, so it's fine.
Yeah,
I can just spread out and I have a cold patch and I have... You can roll over and get your nice stuff. That's the beauty of it, you see.
It is, of course, sheep shearing season. And it's good to see that.
Oh, right.
It's good
okay.
to see that Michael Leddy.
Fair
has,
enough.
Right. Come out in. Come out in support of his fellow sheep.
Yes, and good morning to you too,
good
Greg.
Morning.
Yes,
how are you keeping?
I'm great. Yeah, I agree with. Even last night was the first night I didn't have a water bottle myself. It was. It's heading that direction. It's just. I probably won't even use a hot water bottle tonight.
I know.
By the way, it's looking.
And people with fans blowing the warm air of the room around the room. It's like the hot air conditioning on full, but in a hot way, not a cold way. Just to let you know, by the way, there is a car on fire at Woodlands on the Remelton Road. It's causing some traffic delays. So if you're out in the road, just be a little bit careful. So how was your week, Michael? Anything
great
to report?
Well, none entertainment-wise, not really.
Just, no,
in general. Yeah. In general, no. I was out and about doing my walking, getting some sun, getting my hair cut, as you alluded to there, Greg.
It was brilliant.
And it was a good week. And I'm looking forward. My brother is up this weekend for the rally. He's a marshal. He's involved with it. So we'll be heading out for a drink and catching up. We haven't seen each other in months.
Lovely.
So very much looking forward to. Oh, very much so.
Well, how was your week, Fionnuala?
Very
you,
nice.
Any, did
yeah.
you do anything nice?
No, well, no. Just been working
last
away.
Last Friday was the lunch, which
it was
a huge
so
success.
That took me a little bit to get over now because it went so
it's
well.
A big build
so
up to things
time.
Like that, isn't there? You know, there's a lot of planning and preparation. And
well, that was mostly the staff of the thing, but it was a fantastic day. We had almost 150 business people from around the, not just Letterkenny, but a few from outside as well came in to come to lunch and to listen to Sinn Féin leader Mary Lou McDonald. So it was a fantastic event for the chamber, and I think for the region, because we even got a mention in the Dáil during the week. So at least
that's right.
The conversations that we're having are going to the right places. So
and
that's
Leo Varadkar accused in that exchange. Leo Varadkar accused Lou McDonald, which was quite clever. Have you anything good to say about Donegal?
Oh, I know. And then proceeded to go on about the new road in Mayo. I feel we're going to need to send him a little map. And go,
all right, okay. I am interested in both of you talking to me about Transformers 7, The Rise of the Beasts. It's in the cinema. You just went to watch it, Fionnuala. I'll start with you this week because I think I started with you last week, Michael.
No, we did. We went to see it.
And Fionnuala was in great form on Sunday evening, weren't you? You were pepping and full of life.
I may have slightly been, you know, overindulged in the old grain. And I was...
That started Friday.
I know.
Just a bit of a weekend now, in fairness. The chamber could be a dangerous spot. But we went on Sunday because I've been dying to
see
it.
Would you characterise it as a blowout?
Small bitty.
But anyway, going back to the film.
We went to see it on Sunday because I was really looking forward to it. I strangely love the Transformer movies. From when I watched the first one, I just was like, oh my God. People are going to be offended now, but I was like, I'm not sure if this might overtake the Bible as the greatest story ever told. It is awesome. It's just so good, the first one. And then it kind of went through a bit of a transition because Shia LaBeouf was absolutely brilliant in it. And he just set a lovely tone where it was kind of funny and quirky and that kind of thing. And then he kind of lost the run of himself in real life, which sort of...
Was Mark Wahlberg in them at one point?
He was in.
He came in after Shia LaBeouf.
Four and five. He's right, in four and five, yeah.
Yeah, so Shia LaBeouf did 1, 2, and 3. He had Megan Fox as his partner in 1 and 2. Then she lost the run of herself and she ended up not in 3. Then he lost the run of himself and he ended up not in 4 and 5, where Mark Wahlberg came in. Then they brought in You Love 6.
Oh, Bumblebee is a great film with Hayley Steinfeld, who's also playing Hawkeye, and she's in the Emily Dickinson show.
Yeah.
So and then we come to number seven, and Fionnuala lost a run of herself and was in terrible state on Sunday night. But I'm not going to mention that again.
I'm still loving Transformers, though. I wasn't that bad.
Are these 1 to 7 sort of the same-ish kind of stories, or if they diverged an offshot, or what?
No, they kind of go back and forth a bit. So 1, 2, 3 were in a pattern. Mm. 4 and 5 kind of jumped forward then in time. Now the Bumblebee then went back to the 70s.
To the 80s, yeah. And it's a prequel, and it's a different tone. And it's by far and away the most critically acclaimed.
That's 6.
That's number 6, yeah.
Okay.
And that's a great entry point, and it's, I would say, the best of them, and it's a completely different tone, and critics loved it. It's like 91% from critics and audience. Everyone loved it.
Right, well, let's get to number 7. Did you watch it in 3D or
no.
regular or
oh,
what?
God, no,
did
I mentioned
that. I wasn't feeling well. How would I do 3D?
I foolishly suggested it, and that was shot down. No.
She'd be like, Michael, are you finished with that box for the popcorn?
Yeah, I was in. It definitely wasn't going to happen that I did 3D.
No,
definitely not.
No,
but
you could barely handle the 3D on the way to the cinema.
You mean life?
Life.
I went. Stop! It wasn't that bad. I went. So we went to not in 3D. We went to see it. To be honest, I'm not really mad about 3D, anyways. I always am disappointed by it because in my head,
it's 1D too
I'm
much.
A child of 3D that was so excited when it would come. You know the way when it first came and you thought, oh my God, this is going to be like being in the middle of the movie. And really, a couple of flowers pop out.
Now, so many of us have different levels of vision in our eyes. I think, and we kind of talked a little bit about this before we get into the film, Apple have thrown everything at this new sort of combined reality headset.
Mm-hmm.
I fundamentally think that it's never going to work. There'll always be people that enjoy films in 3D and what have you. I just don't think we like things over our head interfering with what our brains generally expect. You know, I mean, even virtual reality in the PlayStation never really took off. Do you remember they did the 3D for Sky? They stopped investing in it. The BBC did as well because people didn't want to stand in the pub wearing glasses. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Cotton glass. Now, I don't mean regular prescription glasses, but these were different types of glasses. So people who didn't wear glasses didn't want to wear them. People who did wear glasses didn't want to wear them over their glasses. And I just think anything that goes over your eyes or face, I don't think we're as a
people are
ever going to really go mass adoption. Do you know?
Yes.
Not like a phone, for an example.
Well, I just think I think it's probably even a genetic thing that you're not. The idea is better than the actual.
Yeah.
Like the thought of being in the middle of it is just, oh my God, it'll be amazing. But I personally don't like when they're on because I feel like I'm losing my senses. You know, I'm not aware of what's around me.
And you're a talker too. So when you turn to look at him.
I'm not, exactly. Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And it's just, but I think it's even that fight or flight.
Yeah.
I've got this thing on me and I can't really know where.
Yeah,
I don't like that
but
feeling.
But maybe, I suppose, then you have to be able, you have to sit there and just immerse yourself in that film and ignore the reality. But that's what I say. I don't think people feel there's vulnerability almost to it. I don't know how you would describe
I think
it.
That's
but
the
I just
thing,
don't.
Yeah.
It's never risen above novelty factor, I just think. It's never become the mainstream accepted way of doing these things.
The Apple ads have people standing in the kitchen with these on and doing this with their hands. You know, I'm demonstrating here, moving virtual screens and all. And it's just, I don't think enough people, some will, I just think enough people want to sort of go, well, I've got these on. What if someone comes in the back door or what if, you know what I mean?
It's just like, I do not trust my friends and family enough to be that vulnerable in their presence.
Vulnerable. Vulnerable is a really good word.
I think that's it.
Now, I never thought of it, but yeah, of course.
Whether or not young people coming up will feel differently because there's so much more technologically immersed anyways. You know the way, I mean, you have babies now that are swiping, you know.
Yeah.
It's the first thing they do when they pick up anything is start tapping or swiping.
Maybe it's the next generational generation.
Maybe they'll be more ready for it, as in, because we're still not 100%.
I think it's definitely not for me and my generation, because anyone watching on cam will have seen that I just spilled a glass of water over myself. So I can't master a glass of water.
Well,
I'm never going to manage it with a headset on.
Let's pick up Transport Sevens then. It follows on from, was it Bumblebee that you mentioned?
Mm-hmm.
Or
yeah.
does it?
No, it
does.
This is, again, if you're kind of doing them in that order, it's sort of a prequel.
Can you describe the world? Right, so it is a regular world with cars that turn into robots.
Yeah. Oh, it's Earth.
Does everybody know they exist?
No. It's Earth in the present time. And basically what it is that there's a this bunch of aliens. And Mike is going to jump in when I go wrong because he's better at the comic book
background.
So it's basically, it's these bunch of aliens that were created. They have a creator and they can transform into absolutely anything, any mechanical thing. Some of them have the ability to replicate themselves as in like 3D sort of images of themselves off to the sides and that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
As they're going along, they can change their shape and colour and all that sort of thing even as they're going. They then are attacked by a being on their planet and they are forced to evacuate their own planet and they spread out across the galaxy and a certain number land here on Earth, as Earth is. They are hidden amongst us based on as...
Cars, trucks,
planes, automobiles.
Bumblebee can be a Volkswagen Beetle in the 80s or a Corvette in the more modern time, but it's still Bumblebee, like
yeah.
It's who he is.
So it's just the thing. They're hidden among us, and then basically what it is then is every once in a while something happens. In the later movies, so you're not really giving anything away, they become known to the whole world that they're there because there's, you know, typical kind of a comic book type thing. There's a threat against the world and everybody bands together and all that kind
of
stuff.
And there's an uneasy existence, presumably something that the enemy sees, the usual type of thing that goes with those things.
Yes.
So, but these then are back in the beginning now. So this is when Bumblebee is set, kind of when they nearly first arrives and he's sort of like a lost soul, doesn't really know who he is type thing. This one is sort of the next. You just like it because it's got emotion and heart. It's a comic book movie. It's not supposed to be like that.
Yes, it is.
This one then is set
a few years later.
He's now met up with all the rest of his mates and they are...
There's a MacGuffin in this. There's this thing, the trans warp key. It doesn't really matter what it is, but it's important to the good guys and it's important to the bad guys.
Yeah.
And that drives the story. It's a well-structured story.
And it is a big cinema fantasy... blow your socks off type.
Oh, it absolutely
isn't it?
You know, which summer movie. It's a summer movie.
They're not as common as they once were.
Yeah. This is the summer blockbuster now that's out at the moment. Yeah. Basically, it happens in this movie is that the Transformers are here now. Their planet has been destroyed. So all of a sudden then, these new aliens have come down and they're looking for this transwarp key, which brings the Transformers out of hiding in order to try and get the key themselves so that they can get themselves home. That then in turn brings them in contact and it turns out that they're not the first Transformer aliens to come here. There are the originals, which are the Primals. And the Primals are animal shaped. And this is basically what it is. They kind of come into it. And it's just that whole story then of good versus evil.
Yeah.
And the kind of battle plays out. There's a search and they're going across country and all that kind of thing. They head to Peru in this. It's absolutely stunning.
It's beautiful, yeah.
It's really well done. Really,
and the only thing else to add to that, what's important to say, is that the entry point for viewers is that the story is told from the point of view of two humans. There's a guy who's kind of down on his luck trying to help his sick brother and looking for a job. There's a lady who's a sort of junior archaeologist and... They don't know each other when the film starts, but they get wrapped up in the Transformers battle. But the film is told from their POV. So you have that entry point of two brand new characters who get caught up in this world. And that works really well, as it always does. Whenever they do that, they usually do it really well.
What would you give it out of 10, Michael?
I'll give it a solid 8 or 9. I loved it. Great fun.
It's a big film.
Great film.
It has everything that you want from the Transformers movies. It's got some fantastic chases. It's got some fantastic battles with the different Transformers. You know, it's really big screen, you know, big screen kind of a movie. There's lots of jumps in it. There's, you know...
Oh, yeah. There was a couple of times. Yeah, you jumped away.
If you're younger too,
yes,
it's just pure fantasy.
Pure fantasy,
yeah. It just
drags
you into next
thing
you know...
They just do it really well.
And it's not...
Next thing you know, you go home and you're playing with a car.
I have an Optimus Prime. I have a big Optimus Prime. It was a gift years ago and I love it. But another thing about it is it's a well-told story and they haven't always done that. I would always point to the second movie, and I'm afraid Fanu's going to hit me here, but I thought the second movie was really stupid and made some really stupid storytelling choices that bugged me. But they fixed it by the third one, and this one, the story works, in terms of what the good guys want, what the bad guys want, and how it hangs together. So it's a very simple structure, but it works.
Yeah, I think it's for all age groups as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's one of
it's fantasy violence. I mean, there's violence, but it's robots, so it's fantasy violence, you know.
Violence. Okay, no. So you're 7 or 8 out of 10?
Oh, you can go, 8 or 9 even. I really loved it. It's a good film. Really good film.
Yeah, no, me too as well. I really enjoyed it. I have to say they did a good job of it. I'm the other way with it, as in I really like it when it's all just about blowing things up and running around and doing all the stuff.
I know.
When they start to put in a lot of heart into it, I'm like, ugh, I don't...
Vanilla's just too cool for school.
That Bumblebee has a heart. Michael likes that kind of thing. But this one was a nice mix of the two. To me, it went back to, which I liked, loved one. I liked two. I wasn't mad about three because it went all hearty. But I think it went back to the original thing, which is what I loved about Transformers. It just had a lot of stuff in it. And even the fact that there are transforming animals, I allowed myself to.
And the only other thing,
accept that as reality.
We won't say about it, but the final scene says where the franchise is going next, and it's very exciting. We were chatting about that in the car, and I was online.
Oh, are they going to Jurassic Park?
Something's going to happen. Well, you know,
that would be awesome too.
It's not a bad guess. He doesn't know how, but there's something exciting coming.
This
in
is
the franchise.
Part of a trilogy, and we couldn't work out whether or not this is the first of the trilogy, or is Bumblebee is the first.
And this is
lots to look forward.
The
to.
Director of this did. I looked at the director of this was the guy who directed Creed 2. Mm. He got this on board. They asked him to do a Bumblebee, and he just didn't want to. He loved Bumblebee. He loves Hayley Steinfeld. And I read an interview with him during the week, and he said for no other reason than he didn't want to just do another two.
Did he do Creed 3, I wonder?
No.
Because a couple of people I was chatting to, young fellas, loved Creed 1 and 2.
But not
but they didn't like 3 because it got too emotional. two more storytelling-y, relationship feelings-y, and not enough
It's the same thing with Fast and Furious. I could fully accept Fast and Furious as a concept, except that they keep going... to what's
the family,
the main guy, and they keep
Dom's
looking
family, Dom's family.
To do the emotion and to like, oh my god, yeah, I'm in
See,
a lot of pain.
Fionnuala is it's laughing away, pain. And I'm just wiping the tears out of the corner of my eye.
It is funny. It is. Yeah. What's his name?
He doesn't.
Vin Diesel.
Yeah. Vin Diesel. Do you know? I mean, he's good at what he does.
Absolutely.
But you just make him do what he does.
He does what he does.
Do
he's really good at what he does,
there.
But he doesn't have range.
No.
But he's good at what he does.
And I don't expect
and he knows
him to have
that.
Range.
He knows
you
what he's good at.
You hardly expect the poor man to have range.
Yeah, exactly. But I've really watched nothing of any consequence. But I did re-watch the first series of Manhunter.
So good.
Yeah, really, really good. Good old-fashioned storytelling. And I started the second series, but it was too familiar, so I'd watch that. I've watched that too.
Oh, it was too recent.
So,
yeah.
But the reason I watched it is because I saw ITV was showing a new series 3 of it, but they mustn't have. I didn't watch the trailer correctly. It must have just been a rerun of one
I
or two.
Because
I don't think they've made 3. But
I don't know.
Then.
I don't know.
But if you like that, you know what's a really good one is, and it's an old one that I watched years ago, Manhunt as well. But it's the setting up of like the behavioral unit. It's on Netflix. It's setting up with the behavioral unit in the FBI in America.
Oh, I love that. No, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
Mindhunter, that is.
Yeah, Mindhunter. No, that's what I'm saying. If you're going to go back and revisit things,
maybe
like, that's
I could rewatch that again, but I'm looking for those types of, you know, big, great shows that you sit down and you...
There hasn't really been them. And now with this writer strike going on for so long.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this has gone on so long.
Content gap. There's a content gap coming down the road.
Yeah, we'll be lucky if we see any decent new stuff coming out by next summer.
I think there's been a content gap for the last year and a half.
But particularly, like, the American networks should be going back with new shows in mid-September through October. Which means they should be filming now from the start of June.
I saw a trailer for a new Magnum. Did you mention that? No.
No. Well, I know there is a new Magnum.
There is a new Magnum.
Yeah, it's in its fifth season, I think, at this stage. But I didn't try it. I couldn't. There's one Magnum. It's Tom Selleck. Anyone else is just acting, pretending. So, and I'm watching old Magnum at the moment. I watched a great episode of proper classic Magnum during the week. I mean, a great episode. The lady who wrote it is one of my favorite writers. It was funny. It was clever. It's what Magnum should be. I don't need a fake Magnum.
I met Higgins, a woman. I'm out. Now, she's a very
beautiful
good
lady, yeah.
And she's very good at what she does. But I'm out. There was no need to make her. It was like they just picked a... hung it on it. Same with
and
the,
Higgins
same
is
they
so,
did MacGyver.
But those
I
kind,
loved
yeah,
MacGyver.
Those kind,
it's just
they,
for a different generation.
Those kind
for
of,
us.
Those
for
kind of decisions that they're making now are actually almost becoming fatal in that... If that's seen as being woke ideology,
I know.
Right, in the culture wars,
go on, yeah.
they could literally say, no, we're not watching it. No one watch it. You know what I mean? We've seen it with different things. Well, that's the space we're in at the moment.
I watched two or three of the first series.
Probably just changing the gender of a character probably wouldn't be enough at this point. But
I think they were going to hook up.
Oh, they did hook up. They've hooked up, yeah.
I know that from...
I didn't even watch it any further.
I was like two or three in and I was like, I feel like Magnum and Higgins are going to hook up. And I was like, and anybody listening who watched the original is now getting a picture in your head and you're like, no. That can't happen. No.
Well, we'll allow you to consider that picture in great detail as we take this break. Michael and Fionnuala are with us. So we've gone done Transformers. Mm-hmm. Both of them loved it. And I think it looks like a film. We're watching the trailer here for those of us on the stream and for me in front of the screen. And it looks good. It really does. I wouldn't mind going to the theatre, if that's all right. And I might go with you to Sweeney Todd.
You're not
going to
stay and finish the show?
No. Walk with me on this journey. Pretendy journey.
Pretendy.
Sweeney Todd in On Green.
Yeah, I went along to see this a couple of weeks ago. One thing I've definitely doubled down on this year is that I'm a big fan of opera. Huge fan of opera, yeah. And I joke a lot. And there's an element of truth in it, but I do...
Did you went without me?
I joke.
Who introduced you to opera?
I mean, okay, well, there's so many things there I could debate, but I'm going to ignore you. So the thing is, I make a lot of humour.
It kind of feels true, but we'll not dig
into that.
We'll not off the can of worms.
We'll not open that can of worms. So I always joke about not understanding or liking musicals much, but I think what I get about opera is that it's a stylized fantasy world to begin with. Like, it's out there anyway. So there's no leap when the people start singing. It's just part of the storytelling.
Before we get into that, right, let's talk about... I think opera is one of those things a lot of people instantly might go, it's not for me, or it's not... You know, they remove themselves from that at all because they presume they wouldn't. Hmm. But that, you go and see, especially live, I think.
Yeah, it's not the case. You're completely right. You're absolutely right. The first, we went to see two, before we get to Sweeney Todd, which was Northwest Opera, myself and Fionnuala were along to see Don Pasquale and Werther, and they were both the Irish National Opera. And in the booklet for the first one of those, the lead actress, she talks about the very thing you just said, Greg, that she even grew up in that culture of, oh, opera is not for people, you know, it's not for ordinary people. And she hates that because once she got involved in it, she was like, they're just stories, just like anything else. And I can definitely attest to that. And although I've gone to see those ones this year, I've been going along to see Northwest Opera for many, many years. And I know Anne Jennings, I know those people, and I've always enjoyed them. I think this was their first production back in like 4 years because of various world events and so forth. It was the weekend Fionnuala was away. So I went with someone else.
Convenient.
And I was Fionnuala that night because I was the one leaning over and saying things like, would you call that dress blue or sort of bluey green? And my friend Laura was like, what are you doing? And I was like, I'm Fionnuala. But it didn't make any sense. So Sweeney Todd is a very famous story. There was a play. Originally it was a serial done like in the 1800s to you know, those magazines like
Penny Dreadfuls.
Yeah, Penny Dreadfuls. That's exactly it. Thank you. So in 1970, there was a play, and then 1979, there was this opera was based on the 1970 play, and it's that script, it's this book, it's that that's been done, this version. This was a local production, so again, it didn't have the production values of the shows that we had seen, because it's not the National Opera, it doesn't have the funding or the backing that that group has, but it definitely has the talent. It's not just local talents. Anne Jennings reaches out and always brings in international talents as well. So you had people from outside of Ireland on stage and doing the music and so forth. Very enjoyable show. Thoroughly loved it. It was a Friday and a Saturday. Friends of mine were there both nights, even chatting about it during the week. Thumbs up. It's a different scale of production because it's a local production, but very enjoyable. And the thing about it is coming right back to what you said at the top of it, Greg. It is for everyone because it's just another way of telling a story. And the story, like all of these stories I've mentioned, but particularly Sweeney Todd, it's a very strong story. I mean, you're hooked. You know what's happening. You know, he's an anti-hero. Someone done him wrong and now he's back in the city. And okay, he's a bit homicidal and yes, he's murdering people. But so did Dexter. And we were with Dexter on his journey. So we can also be with Sweeney Todd on his journey. And I'm laughing because, you know, he walks around throughout the whole story carrying his razor quite openly and waving it about it. And you're like, really? No one. But it's the fantasy world.
Yeah, it's all over at played, isn't it?
Yeah, it's done. That's what it's about. The music was fantastic. The performers, the singing. And I was chatting to a gentleman during the week who is himself a singer. And that was the aspect of the show that appealed to him the most. And he was able to, you know, use the proper terminology that I can't use. But he was very impressed with the singing. I thought it was just a great fun show, and that was about two weekends ago.
So obviously people don't get an opportunity to watch that now, but what we'll do in this show, as we have, is flag it up the next time, and maybe it's something that people might get in, get on with. Right, okay, so this is, I'm kind of wondering why this hasn't happened before, Fionnuala, I suppose. The Full Monty, it's being revisited by Disney.
Yeah, it has.
And it's a series, it's not a film. And why did it take so long? But go on.
I to be honest, once I sort of heard of it, I was dying to see because I love the Full Monty. Now, whether or not this is a once-off because it's the 25th anniversary, I don't know. There hasn't really been a lot that I could find to see whether or not there's plans to making another series. It didn't kind of lend itself to let you know that by the time it finished because I ended up watching the whole lot. There's 8 of them and I kind of got caught up in it. I went to it in some ways even just to sort of poo-poo it a small bit because the film is so iconic and I enjoyed the film so much, you kind of be a bit nervous when they go back to it. And they did go back to it with an agenda. Each of the topics are very, it's very political. It's not, while there is that kind of like little bit of comedic joy and that kind of thing, you know, that came in the Full Monty, the basis of the Full Monty was that here were these guys who were just really desperate. You know, their lives were torn upside down by the closing of this one industry in their town. And this very much reflects that kind of north of England sort of a feeling that, you know what I mean, that there's, they've sort of been left behind and that there's a lot of struggle there that's not been addressed by their government and that kind of thing. So every week it sort of touches on the different kind of topics that is the hardships in the area. All of the fan favourites are there. All of the guys are in it to differing levels, I would say, based on their current age, 25 years later. There's one or two of them that kind of just pop up in it a little bit. But the main characters show up. And it is enjoyable. It's not, don't go to it thinking that it's going to be the movie. Everybody has kind of grown up and in some parts of it, you know, Gaz is still the same kind of Gaz that he was in the original. No real kind of solid grounding and that sort of a thing in it. You know, I think over the course of the thing, he probably has about 3 or 4 jobs in which he just keeps getting fired for them from doing different stuff. And there's a small bit of you thinking now you're an actual, you know, granddad now. It's time to pull yourself together, no more than the rest of us. So there's a little bit of that in it. But in the, I think really what they wanted to do was they wanted to tell particular stories and they used the Disney, that Disney used, or however they got it to, the Full Monty kind of affection that people have.
Yeah, but
and,
in
you
that,
know,
there must have been a challenge to that, Fionnuala. Interesting your views on this, in that, you know, it has to travel well for a big streaming platform global, right?
I don't know how this is going to travel in America.
Yeah, okay.
I'm very curious about it because I agree with what you're saying. And actually, it's very funny because they touch on such hard-hitting subjects. At the end of it, there is if you experienced anything, actually an American warning. Like the American is the first number. And for the rest of the world, check out what's called.
Because even you, so close to where it's based and with an understanding of it, you actually didn't say England. You actually defined it as north of England. So it's really, you know, cultural within
I
that.
Would
so
think, well,
blow that up across the world.
Well,
and,
I mean, first of all, like, it's very, I always remember when The Commitments came out, which was a very particular film in Dublin. And they had to, like, they always used to say when they went to America that they used to give, like, you know, not just English, Irish English to English for the Americans to be able to understand the accent and different things like that. This is quite accented. You know what I mean? Even
yeah,
for
I
me,
guess, yeah.
somebody that hears it a lot on my regular television and that kind, you know, because you hear north of England accents all the time on television. So even for me, there was a couple of bits where you were like, what was that? You know, the way that you kind of go back and re-listen again, because it's a specific accent. There's a specific kind of a humour in it then as well, which I think that Irish humour is very similar to it, but I'm not too sure is American humour.
But we watch shows from America and we talk about it, and even last week on the show, you talk about Baltimore and you talk about Texas, or it could be New York or California or whatever, and we sort of, we don't, now maybe the accents is, that's the curveball you've chucked in there. And maybe to some extent, I mean, we watch American comedy, like one of your favourite shows.
Yeah.
What's its name? Ted Lasso, for an example. Do you know what I mean? And that actually strikes a balance between American and
UK. It does.
So, like, maybe we're doing the American, Canadian, and other countries a disservice, because maybe they look on over here and, you know, the north of England is the Baltimore or
That's a really good point. That's a really good point.
Maybe they do, and that's maybe with the Ted Lasso thing going so massively in America that it has kind of made them start looking at more. I suppose we all have our own internal bias and that kind of thing. Yeah, you just assume that in America they, you know, there's quite a lot of they can be quite insular. And a lot of the stuff, you know, if you're in America and you're watching TV, you do not see in their general television. Well, the last time I was there about 4 or 5 years ago, you don't see programs that you'd see like from across the world.
I know what you mean.
It tends to be that they make a lot of American programs and that's what it is. Now, the platform is probably opening up, Netflix. You know, in America, Netflix is different to the America here. You wonder, do they have as much foreign programming as we would have? Mm. I don't know. This, I did really enjoy it. There was a lot of stuff in it, you know, it's a lot of social commentary. It reminded me a lot, if you've ever seen, of kind of a cleaner version of kind of like Shameless or it's very kind of sort of a grit to it. Some of it's, you know,
so this
very
sounds
tragic,
drama comedy. This sounds drama comedy, not comedy drama then.
Yes, yeah, I would say it's actually kind of leans more in that general direction where it's talking about different stuff. It's talking about really hard hitting issues that are affecting that part of the world, and not just that part of the world, all over the place. I did enjoy it. I went into it thinking it was going to be one thing. I didn't really like the first one because I wanted it to be more like the movie. Yeah. But actually, when I stuck with it just to find out what was going on with the characters, I did find it interesting. But
We were watching the trailer there whilst you've been speaking too as well. And it is interesting when you talk about the older characters, because obviously when it was first made, you had young fellas and then older fellas. And obviously you had that 25 years and they've brought them in, as you say, you know, one's in a ride on scooter and all that.
Oh, that's it. And there's a few other, like Tom Wilkinson's is in it now, you know, who played the oldest of them all when they were doing the stripping. And he's very much kind of just, anytime you ever see him, he's sitting down in the cafe having a cup of tea. And I'm assuming that it must have something to do with
the stage and strip.
His Asian thing. Okay. And they kind of reflect back on a little bit on that, but not as much as you would think.
Yeah.
So I don't know whether they're going to do another series.
Did they need to?
Maybe
they go to Calendar Girls next or something.
I don't know, and revisit Calendar Girls. Just, Lord.
You know yourself.
I know. Maybe that's what they'll do, but I would have liked to have seen to know more about the characters and where they are now. And there was a lot of that wasn't fleshed out because there was very much centering on the kind of political themes that they were trying to get across and the, you know, the one specific issue that was, you know, one of them was like about mental health. One was about old people and no money and stuff. You know what I mean? That kind of thing. They all had that sort of like a heavy grit to it. I did like it. I'd probably give it like about a 7 or so.
That's decent,
I
think.
It's definitely worth going back.
That's a good review.
You haven't seen it?
Never seen the movie.
Oh my God.
I know. I knew that Finlay would react that way.
It's one of those iconic ones.
Yeah.
Even if you didn't want to watch it, at some point you found yourself forced
to watch it. You'd have to deliberately not watch it to not have seen the full Monty.
It's a bit like Baywatch, except it's nothing like it. All right, back.
Keep pace with the leaders on day one of the Donegal International Rally, live on Highland Radio in association with Pulse Venue Letterkenny. Where tonight, Friday, it's the Whistling Donkeys, all folked up and one for the road.
Hey, at the door.
Okay, it's over to Oisín Kelly now, who's down the south of the county. Good morning, Oisín.
Yeah, thanks, Greg. A very good morning. We are in South Donegal. We're down your patch today, so we are, Greg. We're not too far from Ballintra. We're at the end of the opening stage, which is Donegal Bay Stage 1. It's starting down towards Ballyshannon, and it's working its way through the, I suppose, the Ross Nowla and the Ballyshannon and Ballintra's area, and it's coming out here back onto the main road, Greg. So as we speak, there has been no action as yet because the first car due on Donegal Bay is just after 12 o'clock. So it's the course cars that are coming through here at the moment. And I must say, Greg, it's nice in the sunshine down these parts this morning.
Yeah, it's a beautiful part of the county. What's the buzz like, Austin? Because it's been really set up. I saw the service area, I think it's called, set up there between the Tully Earl roundabout and Abbott's. The cones are out. And is there a real sense of a rally atmosphere in the south of the county today?
Yeah, the good atmosphere, Greg. So there is, and even last night for the ceremonial start, which took place down the main street, there was a massive crowd down in the lower main street, just outside the Voodoo, who are one of our sponsors, of course, for bringing you coverage of this event this weekend. And it was fantastic to see so many people out, and there was entertainment and music there. And then we've seen the top drivers, the top 25 crews, plus a few others, came through the start as well in the lower main street in Letterkenny. And listen, it was a fantastic evening because the sun was in the sky, it was nice and warm, there was dancing on the street, people were enjoying
themselves.
And
that was just you and Kevin.
Yeah, I know, there was a lot more than just me and Kevin. So there was, but somebody had said to me then this morning, Greg, as well, that they haven't seen a Thursday night of the rally so busy in quite a while. That there was people about the town and enjoying themselves in the bars and the restaurants as well last night. So, and that's carried through into today. There's a few tailbacks of traffic coming into Donegal town, but nothing too serious. And Brilliant. Getting out of Letterkenny wasn't anything too serious this morning. But it's day one, and there's a lot of people here to see this event, and a lot of people looking forward to it, Greg.
Now, just finally, Oisín, you know, some people are seeing these stages as a bit of a curveball, as a bit of a leveler. You know, the regulars little bit cautious about it, you know, the new guys, you know, chomping at the bit to get onto the tarmac. Is that still the sense down there?
It is, Greg. And listen, change is always good. And it's not that the Donegal International Rally was getting stale or anything, but from a competitor's point of view, it's always good to throw something new into the mix. And this here is very, very much new. If you go back to Rally Ireland 07, one of these stages was used. I think it's actually this Donegal Bay, one of them, right, Seamus and Sam? I've got the president of the motor club and our motorsport correspondent, Seamus McGettigan, alongside me here. So it was used in Rally Ireland. The other stages were used in the Harvest Rally a long time ago. So it is a bit of a leveler for the crews because they haven't been tackled in so long. So they haven't, Greg. But listen, it's good conditions for rallying. It's warm and it's dry. It's not as warm as what it was yesterday, Greg, because there was a worry that maybe the tar might actually be lifting because of the extreme heat that we had over the last couple of days. But it's thankfully it's not that warm today, so that sort of worry has eased about the tar lifting, which could lead to the possibility of cancelled stages. But this opening loop, it is going to be dry for the opening loop, which is good, but there is rain on the way, we're told. Now, they said all week that there was going to be rain coming to Letterkenny, Greg, and we didn't see any sign of it. The weather forecast is given for rain here in the south of Donegal in the afternoon, which adds another dimension then to the rally because, of course, the crews, particularly the guys at the front who are looking to fight it out at the head of the front of the field, their tyre choice is then going to be crucial in that second loop of three stages, which is another factor added into the rally. And this is what the sort of the sport is all about. You have to take into consideration your conditions, what your tyres are going to be, as you look to be the fastest man on the roads around the county.
All right, brilliant stuff. We're going to stick with you, of course, throughout the whole weekend for excellent coverage. Thanks very much for that, Oisín. Oisín Kelly there talking about the weather. Alan O'Reilly of Carlow Weather is with us by coincidence, of course. Right, Alan? I haven't seen any rain at all because it's so unpredictable, and people like yourself, Alan, have been talking about that you can't really say where the showers are going to hit. So what is the story for the weekend for the Northwest, Alan?
Yes, well, you have the best of the weather up there at the moment with some sunshine, but there is showers and cloud moving up from the south of the country along with lower temperatures. So I don't think tar melting will become a problem after the next couple of hours. Temperatures dropping back to 20, 21 degrees for the next couple of days. There are going to be some more widespread showers moving up later this evening and tonight. So there's actually a risk of some rain falling overnight tonight, which could lead to some slippy stages in the morning, especially as that tar has been very dry and very sticky. Rain on top of that could make for some interesting maybe conditions in the morning. A risk of showers then in the afternoon. They're thundery, they're hit and miss. As you say, very hard to predict. It could fall in one part of the stage and not fall in another part of the stage. So very hard to predict exactly where they're going to hit, but there is a high chance of showers. Spain, again on Sunday, there's a chance of showers, probably not as high, but they're going to be hit and miss, they're going to be localised. There is a risk of thunder, there is a risk of lightning. So very unsettled, but like most Irish summers, it'll be lovely between the showers.
That seems to be a pattern through Monday, Tuesday, and I know you're very tentatively talking about perhaps a return of a high pressure later this month. What are your models telling you, Alan?
Yes, indeed. Unsettled through much of next week. Around the end of the week into next weekend, the weather models are showing a risk of low pressure coming from the west, but the high pressure trying to push up from the south. Now, that's a real battle scenario. And what can happen in that is you can get some very warm air pulled up from Spain in the to between the low and the high, which could lead to much warmer temperatures returning. Or we could stay on the cooler side of that and see the warm air go into England. Also, again, depending on the showers, the northwest highest risk of seeing some of those showers. But we could see high pressure building in for the end of the month. And I'm heading to Donegal for a week's holidays the second week of July, and I'm going to bring the sunshine with me, Greg.
Good stuff. And you'll get the nicest ice cream cones you'll get anywhere in the country. Thanks, Alan.
Cheers, Greg.
All right, bye-bye. We might even buy you one.
Good man.
All right, take care. Bye-bye. Alan O'Reilly there. The wonders of modern technology now. Down to Donegal, down to Carlow, and back to Letterkenny. You'd think they were all sitting here in our laps, wouldn't you? Mm. All right, okay. And fair play to Alan there for turning that into kind of a rally forecast, because we didn't tell him in advance, so we appreciate that. Right, okay. So we've done the full Monty, 7 out of 10-ish. We've done Transformers. We've done Sweeney Todd. After Sun. It's kind of after, timely.
Yes, After Sun. Yeah, so I suppose there's three things to say about this. This is a big film from last year. It was a big talking point because Paul Mescal was getting all sorts of award accolades and nominations and stuff. The story is straightforward. It's a father and daughter on holiday. She's 11, he's 31. And it's a first-time project from a lady called Charlotte Wells. She wrote it, she directed it. And it's very much semi-autobiographical, based on a memory she has of being on holiday with her father. And it's one of those films, it's the type of film that I love, because it's a film where, you know, essentially nothing much happens. It's one of those films where it's significant, you know, when someone maybe puts down a glass of water.
So when I'm watching a film and I say to myself, who watches this crap? It's Michael Letty.
It's Michael Letty, yeah, okay. It's me, yeah.
Not me. Anyway.
Well, this one now was watched by a lot of people, and
that's
it has
no
like
defense.
96% on Rotten Tomatoes from critics and 81% from the audience, yeah.
Which is pretty high for the
audience, yeah. And it was, so again, it's very low-key. It's a low-key film. We're just watching them and we piece together, and there's not much story, so there's not much for me to spoil, but I'm not going to spoil anything. But we can piece it together early on.
Someone puts down a glass of water.
Early
on.
You've already said that, yeah. Someone does that. But is it full?
Plot twist?
Or is it half full or half empty, Greg? That's the question.
You spend the hour after you've watched it deciding.
Yeah. So basically, we know that he's not...
just looking... Is that glass going to explode?
Is something? Is he going to? Or no, the question is Michael going to spill that water over himself like he did a half hour ago? So yeah, we're watching the story and we know that they don't spend much time together. He's not with her mother, although they are on very good terms. So they don't see each other very much. And he's obviously trying really hard to give her a good holiday. The actress is wonderful. She's a first timer. Frankie Correa, who is 11. She actually is 11 so far, and she's already lined up loads of other work because she's amazing. For me, she stole the film. Paul Mescal got a lot of praise for his performance in this film. And that's the end of that sentence.
I don't agree.
I'm not a fan of his. I wasn't a fan of Normal People.
He thinks you're an agent.
Normal People. He probably does. He normally does. So as I said, this is the type of film that I normally love, and I didn't love this film at all.
Oh.
At all. I didn't
connect.
I didn't connect with the characters. And I wanted to connect and I wanted to care and I wanted to love the little girl and I wanted to love the father and I wanted to believe in their relationship. Now, the two actresses have a fantastic chemistry because they actually went on a holiday before the filming. The director sent them on holiday for 2 weeks and they've become very close and they keep in touch and all this. That's great. And that's in the film and you can see that connection. But I didn't care. I didn't care. No, I didn't care. And I would give it like
a... I can't believe we got 81 in the...
Oh, it's huge. And again, the thing I would tell to people is, look, if you're the sound of this, go to letterboxd.com. There are glowing reviews from people who wept.
Yeah.
Who wept, who were couldn't believe the power of this film. And it touched people, particularly people having memories of their father, particularly a father.
Well,
that
I
you
suppose
didn't,
then it can't get specific. Anyway, yeah, all right, so what are you giving it out of 10?
I give it about a 4.
Right, Fionnuala, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Anything exciting coming up?
No, just to let people know, I've been getting texts from my chamber colleagues just to say, rally's on, absolutely awesome. So many people around, but don't forget the town is still open for business.
Yeah, it really is.
Be sure and come in. Even, it's good to come in and experience
even
it.
Even tomorrow, actually, because I was speaking to a couple of business people that they've got, you know, it's really quite easy access to their business, but people presume it's not open. So a really good point. Letterkenny, open for business all this weekend. We're back open for business on the 9 till noon show next Monday.
That's it.
Michael Eddy, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you. Loved
Fionnuala
it.
Rabbit, thank you so much. We're back with you, as I say, 9 o'clock Monday morning. Thank you to Niamh and Caroline who worked and put the show together. Really appreciate it. Stay tuned. JB's on the way.